Hi, are we on?
We're on.
Okay.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of Cambridge Inside Out. I'm Robert Winters.
Judy Nathans.
And today is Groundhog Day.
February 2nd.
And tomorrow morning will be Groundhog Day.
What does that mean? What do you mean?
Groundhog Day. It's like
Yes.
It's kind of a Bill Murray sort of
thing. I know. What I mean. That was an interesting movie. Yeah.
Actually, I thought it was a great movie.
Yeah.
I was making a little short list the other day of movies that I thought were just sort of timeless and beautiful in their own way.
Oh, yeah.
And I put that on my list. Another one I would put on my list that I had almost forgotten about was Pleasantville.
Oh,
Seen that? So I watched that.
I think so. Yeah.
I just thought it was a beautiful movie.
Timeless. Yeah, I'd have to think about that. I'll come up with some next time.
And we should come up maybe one of these weeks. What we'll do
is the only thing I think is timeless is Seinfeld, but other than that,
it's actually pretty good. Really. Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Okay.
So anyway, we're in a situation here where normally we would have been talking a little bit about the meeting, the city council meeting that occurred last night, but of course it didn't occur last night. Because of the snowfall, which turned out to be not nearly as bad.
Right, but they didn't know. So
they didn't know.
Yeah, better be safe than sorry.
Yeah, so that's been postponed instead to
tomorrow night, 5:30. The 3rd.
Same time, same channel.
And it'll be a long meeting, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's pretty much, I think I should check. I thought that might be an extra agenda item or something thrown in, but no, it's absolutely.
Unless because they didn't have meetings because of the holiday and then the round table.
So could be some changes to it, but you know, and as always, the COVID report.
So I think a lot of time.
So we might as well. They didn't update the numbers when I checked a short
really?
For today, but I thought maybe it'll be a good thing just at least mention the fact that you know the news is actually looking relatively good right now for us. I thought maybe you just sort of like point out here that to me the image that is most telling is the 7-day averages. I mean, yes, you can look at the increase in numbers and you could barely perceptibly know that it's increasing at a slightly slower rate.
Right.
And the dailies are good. There was a huge drop in the number of current cases yesterday, 143 fewer.
Wow.
I think that was just the reporting was doing a little catch up. So that was sort of good news. But to me, the more interesting one really is the long-term list of the 7-day averages.
Yeah, I could see it going down on the right there. Yeah.
Yeah. And the thing is up until even a week or so ago, I was thinking, you know, when we saw this resurgence in October, November, and then it dropped down, then a resurgence, and then it dropped down, then a resurgence. Is it going to keep do that and then go up again? But if you look at nationally, there's pretty good reason to believe that maybe this is now going to start subsiding. And in conjunction with the vaccinations, which are dreadfully slow, but that we may be actually heading toward a good place or a better place than we have been for a while. So,
you know, call me stupid or whatever, but I can't even imagine getting out a vaccine to this many people, given the logistics of it. So I think, I mean, I know people are complaining, but can you imagine trying to get and all the steps you need and the people you need to administer it and the equipment you need, the vials you need, everything.
But I have to say that the fact that a vaccine was coming and they've known this for.
And they didn't prepare the previous administration. That's true.
Essentially, the road should have been fully paved by now.
Because there was no communication with states. They could care less. I mean, that's really
one of the. One of the things that I heard or read the other day, which I think is actually you know, very specific to the Cambridge situation. It's like, people were complaining, I've been calling up, I want to get an appointment to go get the vaccination and do this here, whatever. And it's like craziness. But part of the reason is that the city and the local region here, the health officials, they can't promise you
something they don't have
vaccination if in fact they don't have solid
they don't have it
on the supply
they don't so they, right
so they're forced to be you know so what's the limiting factor is still sort of the supply and chain you know and that's something you know we may become great at this afterwards you know but in
well,
the here and
did,
now
but look what we did with testing. I talk to people, they can't believe we have everyday testing, and we've had it for at least 4 months.
Of course, you know, that was dependent on our ability to have the materials to do testing, which
is we have the Broad Institute and the ability to turn it around.
We had those, so we could do that. You know, so Cambridge was sort of geographically a bit lucky in that regard.
I know, but some people think just because Moderna's here and Pfizer that we have some special leg up, but that's not true either.
I mean, these materials are actually manufactured elsewhere.
In many places elsewhere, I've heard, like even not even in the States, some of them.
Yeah, and they really ought to be kind of diversifying that and having multiple. Of course, you know, things that the major pharmaceutical companies have pointed out, though, is that quality control matters a lot. So you can't just ramp up and then start cutting corners. You've got to make absolutely
every step. I mean, it goes from the cold chain, and then you have the 5 hours to administer the doses you're given in a certain, and if those people don't show up, then, I mean, that's the whole thing, but who do you give it to? And should you have more people waiting than need it? It's just.
And until the Johnson & Johnson product comes out on the line, the thing is the current materials are extremely temperature sensitive.
Moderna less so, but still requires.
It's a lot. So it's
not like minus 94. Yeah.
You don't just take it out from behind the milk carton in the fridge. No. You know, it's tough. So yeah, I understand it's challenging, and I do believe we're going to be really good at this afterwards, when it probably doesn't matter as much. But should there be a resurgence or some other variant another year or two from now, God forbid, we will have learned a lot.
Another year or two? I think it's closer than that. They're already coming up with.
Some
of the variants are already out there.
Oh, no, the variants exist, but the question in terms of a major public health crisis, you know, and being able to respond in appropriately to a major crisis, you know.
Well,
I mean, there are some predictions I was reading this morning that, you know, if they get a handle on coronaviruses more generally, that includes things like common cold, I believe.
Well,
then it actually could become a pretty routine matter if containing it, you know. So,
well, there are people, I mean, there's a, when this all started, there was a series on Netflix called Pandemic, which was actually made before all this happened. And there was a team of people, young people, working on a universal vaccine.
Yeah.
So that is in the works somewhere that would affect everything. So I believe in science. So let's go.
Yes. And I believe in optimism too. So I'm sort of trying to.
Yeah, you're probably the right side of me, but
these things here. Yeah.
Okay.
So another item I think is worth mentioning, other than the obvious because of the pandemic, something that's marginally related to that was the city. There were calls even as far as way back as last April to address the need for housing.
For the unhoused,
you know, which may or may not include, you know, concerns about infection, COVID-19 infection and whatever, but they had to de-densify places like the Caspar facility, 240 Albany Street.
Congregate housing. I mean, where people.
Right. So, you know, and there were, I'm sure you remember there were calls from some city councilors and those activists, in other words, to sort of house everybody. Yeah. And I think as Mark McGovern very correctly pointed out at a recent hearing about this, is that and back then, it's not like we didn't try. It's just that you need a partner, and it wasn't so easy to find a partner. So at some point, the suggestion came about that the New England School of English, which is a place, the facility had a dormitory facility on Green Street, 11 to 15 Green Street, would be available, I assume, because with COVID being what it is, so many people were not actually coming to school.
These were dorms. It wasn't a school.
Right. So the dormitories were not in use because the students weren't around.
Right.
So, and they probably don't have the deep pockets of a Harvard University. So, you know, they wanted to get some income. Pardon me.
Turn that phone off. See, I always
remember to do that, but I forgot to do it this time.
All right.
But anyway, the thing is that the facility was made available, or the suggestion was made available, and I think through state funding, it was then you know, the city was, they were able to establish this non-congregate, basically like a dormitory type of space, you know, for people. It was, and it's state funded, so it wasn't just for Cambridge people. So it was drawing from.
And how long was that in operation?
It's been around for probably a month, month and a half, at least, I think.
Oh, just the,
The order, which was really, was made subject to the charter, right?
At the January 11th Why was it, Well,
first off, the facility was already in place. And I think that there were some people who were trying to kind of dovetail the original order. Again, I'm speculating a little bit here, but the original order was very specific to saying, hey, we've heard, got wind that this school is going to may have the space available. The city then actually did make the arrangements coupled with the state and they established the facility. So in a sense, it's old news. So
but why, were people actually in it? They already were in it.
Yeah, they're in there now, right?
So, okay.
So the thing is that, but the committee report was all, from a November meeting was only coming back in mid-January.
I see.
So, and it went, you know, the action, the desired action had already taken place. So it was in a sense moot.
So why was there an order then?
Because it was in the report.
I see.
Because they, they passed it in the report, you know, the manager and the public health officials that acted, you know, they didn't need it. They didn't need the order to actually do what made sense and do what was available. They had been looking all around anyway. I mean, they wanted something in particular, in addition to just like the war memorial. So, so anyway, so in a sense, it was moot, but it was made subject to the charter, right? I presume it was because there are other activists who were going to try and use this to sort of promote an agenda beyond just.
Who charter righted it?
Denise Simmons.
Right.
So, so anyway, so it showed up on the order, on the agenda for the meeting that was supposed to happen yesterday. And there has been a kind of a big hue and cry, you know, in a flyer campaign by a group promoting. It's actually part of, I think, a national initiative.
Yeah, because it says it on the bottom. In the contract.
Yeah, it's like housing first and whatever. And I actually saw something in the news today of a kind of an overthrow, occupation of a hotel in the West Coast of
pretty
much using exactly the same rhetoric as
this.
So I think this is kind of part of a, and the activists who are pushing here do seem to be part of a kind of a larger entity than just a Cambridge people. So So I think what they're planning to do is to make use of the public comment time at the council meeting tomorrow to draw a lot of attention to this. Now, now you can draw attention to the need for better housing for a broader range of people of all circumstances. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or you can use it as just plain old political organizing. So I'm not really quite sure what they're really up to for this.
Well, we'll find out.
But they do want to be, they do want to be loud, apparently. And they will be there. Now, one of the things that I think needs to be pointed out, and again, this is, I think, if I may suggest so, somewhat in sync with what Mr. McGovern had said, which is that when you provide, you know, room and room or room and board for people in a way like this, you know, it's not the easiest population to house.
You have to have support systems there.
There are, you need support systems. There are substance abuse issues. There are mental health issues associated with many.
Okay, but wait a minute. Don't you have to either make it a dry shelter or what, or a wet shelter?
This, well,
I thought
most,
that was
most of the congregate places like 240 Albany.
That is
that's a wet shelter, but it is exceptional. There are very few wet shelters around.
That's what I'm going to say.
Yeah.
So who evaluates whether you should be in one or
really
the other?
I'm not really sure, but the thing is that this one on Green Street actually is, even though it's, I mean, I always think of wet as sort of alcohol, but it's really alcohol and narcotics.
I think if you're actively intoxicated.
In regardless of what your matter
is. Right.
Yeah. So the one in Green Street actually apparently allows actively intoxicated people.
Oh my goodness.
Right. Okay. And the thing is, it's also being operated by Solutions at Work, which is an entity which I still think of as locating of basically supplying furniture and clothing and doing a lot of support services. I don't know how much experience they have in actually operating a facility like this.
Well, they got permission. They got they're doing it. So they must have some kind of
something, we hope. But, you know, and I don't know how well known it is, but, you know, in this particular facility on Green Street, there have already been, in the relatively short time it's been around, there have been several overdoses, and one person who went across the street to the parking garage and committed suicide off the parking garage. So again, yeah. I mentioned that here to sort of amplify the concerns from Councilor McGovern, who said that these facilities are, you really cannot understate the need for good support services to go with them. Yeah. So it's not just a matter of a roof and heat, you know, and running water. It is a lot more. Yeah. And I think people need to understand that when they're advocating, that they're advocating for something that's actually a lot bigger than they may think.
And especially when you don't want police involved, then you better have a really strong social worker or whatever. I mean, the mental health component is tremendous.
That's right.
And as it should be, and police should only be a backup in those situations. That's how I feel. But anyway, but I don't think they have that. I don't know.
No, I think, the police are the ones who ultimately do get called in on.
I know, but probably because there hasn't been enough done at the other end. Yeah. I don't know. I really
don't. But as was pointed out at a little gathering of people we had a week ago, that when the Business Improvement District of Central Square was established and they hired all the ambassadors, it was not in the job description for you to go and be on patrol to find bodies in the street. You know, and so that's actually been pretty alarming to the ambassador.
But what about, is one of their, have they been asked to carry, was it Narcan or whatever that?
I think they may be, but I'm not going to say yay or nay.
They'd have to agree to do that. A lot of people wouldn't want to have to do that.
Right, and it may not be all of them.
Right, that's anyway. What I'm saying.
But, you know, it's not like you're that far away from the ability to provide that service. I mean, Narcan is kind of a regular thing in Central Square. I know because even here, we've got some of the leftover kits that we've just picked up off of. Yeah, Renee picks them up and we take them, you know, and I'll get them back to the police or whomever because, you know, it's a common occurrence. You know, it's, so anyway, this, you know, to me, I people feel free to be as political, much of a political advocate as you want, right? Mm-hmm. But I think people just need to also understand some of
the
mechanics and the realities of what's really involved here. So anyway, that's going to be one of the big items that's on the agenda for tomorrow. There's some relatively routine stuff and some potentially big news things as well.
You're talking about in the manager's agenda or just there's a lot of orders,
A combination, really. I mean, one thing that's just sitting on the agenda, which I think could be interesting, but, you know, it's to me, kind of interesting in a nerdy kind of way is, you know, there was the controversy of a year or two ago about the electrical substation that the Cambridge Redevelopment Authority and Boston Properties.
Whole, right.
You know, so they came forward with a proposal to site it within the existing so-called MXD district or the Kendall Square Urban Renewal.
Right.
I think they're now renaming it. They're rebranding it, not
KR
Urban
Renewal. Something.
It's KSERP, yeah. Like,
I can't follow it all,
It's more like now it's the Urban Redevelopment Zone rather than So anyway, so they get a lot of extra development potential in the order of, I think, 600,000 or 700,000 extra square feet of development potential as the cost for they'll also, there's some commitment to, in addition to actually putting the electrical infrastructure within the facility or within the footprint of the zone, there's also a commitment to provide housing some more or accelerate the building of housing, including, I believe, something on the order of 20,000 square feet worth of homeownership opportunities.
Oh, wow.
I'm not sure whether that means limited equity co-op. You can only sell it to a qualified person,
I assume. But and the city would manage that like they do now?
It's really, you know, the Cambridge Redevelopment Authority is the one who works with the with Boston Properties.
Right.
Those are the main parties. And, you know, the Redevelopment Authority exists as a kind of a quasi-independent entity.
Uh-huh.
So they have, I think they still have to adhere to the usual laws, except where there's a carve out within the Kendall Square or the, you know, the whatever develop the, you know, the zone that they're responsible for. But I believe it's actually queued up, all the ducks are in a row, that letter of commitment's already drafted, that'll probably be ordained this week.
Right, because there's a deadline on that, right?
Yeah, I think it's got a little bit of wiggle room on the deadline, but I think that one's going to happen pretty quick. They have a few more sort of these zoning related ones having to do with green, I don't know, technology. There's a couple of ordinance committee meetings come up this week to deal with it. There's another one having to do, I think, next week with the fourth iteration of the alewife zoning, the proposed rezoning out in the quadrangle area.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, there is actually, as part of the meeting agenda, there's a planning board report suggesting that the city council accept, and actually they voted with a positive recommendation on the latest Cabot Forbes proposal for out there in the quadrangle with
the bridge.
Lots of notations.
Oh.
Meaning the thing is there was a lot of hedging potentially. Yeah. What if the building of the bridge over the tracks proves infeasible, and should you allow them to start doing the development only down the road? You said, well, I know we said we were going to do it, but we're not going to really do it. So here's some money instead. Hmm. And, you know, I've been, you know, maybe because I'm sort of watching the news in Washington about people trying to do multi-trillion dollar relief packages, and everybody, I keep hearing the phrase, we got to go big, right?
Well,
you know, and yeah, I have to say that when it comes to the early days of the, you know, the plans for the alewife area, the plans were actually pretty big and interesting and elaborate and detailed, and they were really knitting the whole area together.
And much of
that, it just never played out that way. It basically, what they call the triangle, which is Cambridge Park Drive, going west, that was developed sort of like a kind of an elaborate cul-de-sac. And in some respects, the quadrangle just coming off of Concord Avenue also has feels like a sort of an elaborate cul-de-sac, and knitting them together with some kind of transportation connections between them would be a very good thing.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Yeah.
And I remember speaking with Brian Murphy when we were standing out there years ago, and the city really wanted to see happen was a commuter rail station built out there in addition, you know, between Belmont and Porter Square that would service the whole area. And a bridge would actually be part of that structure. I actually think we should have multiple overpasses over the tracks, knitting the two together, and really turn that into a real place. You know, but that's me.
Yeah. Well.
And find a way to do it. Those developers could find a way to do it.
Yeah. There's so many factors that come into that, though: money, and then the community, and then, you know, things change, recessions, depression, whatever. I mean, you look back at. Nothing simple,
I just hope they can find a way to actually get something through, get that bridge built, and another bridge down the road too.
It's not a car bridge. It's just a pedestrian bicycle shuttle bridge.
The connection. The one that was proposed in the most recent iteration was not one where you could run a shuttle over it. I would hope that they could also provide one so that you could actually be able to ferry people between the LYFT station and whatever job center, light industrial and residential use that actually develops in that site.
Is the Jerry's Pond thing part of that?
No.
Where did I see all these photos of the new Jerry's Pond?
That's on the east side of the Wexford Parkway. Right.
Then, is that in the agenda or something? I know I just recently saw it.
They had a meeting, a Zoom meeting, and they were encouraging it. And it's actually, the news is so far looking frighteningly good compared to what we usually expect about these things, where the developer is saying, yeah, we're going to actually open up recreational access to Jerry's Pond.
No, I saw photos of what they look. Well, no, not recreational access.
Recreational meaning you can actually go up to the water, but you're not going swimming.
There's still a boardwalk. It'll be a boardwalk, but there won't be Yeah.
Right. But that's recreation. Oh, you're you're actually getting, you know, much closer access, and you can.
Right. It's still poisonous.
Well, potentially poisonous. Yeah.
Not potentially, it is.
Yeah. But so anyway, I hope they can find a way to address some of the toxic issues. Yeah. I think they're going to have to in terms of some of the developments.
I don't know where I saw it. Maybe it was an article. I don't know. I just saw all these.
Well, there's been a lot of invitations for people to actually check it out. But I'm actually optimistic about that turning into something pretty good too.
Yeah.
You know, and some of the people who I would expect to be outrageously opposed are going like, hey, this seems pretty good. I'm thinking, wow.
Why would they be opposed? There's nothing else.
Well, it's kind of a history of opposition to any development proposal in that neck of the woods.
Oh, well, development around it in order to do that, you have to do this. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, to whatever degree the people associated with North Stabilization Committee are involved, they tend to be oppositional.
Right.
More so than anything else. So that's kind of what I would have expected. But, you know, so far, things are looking pretty reasonable in that regard. So, I'm going to remain optimistic on that.
Okay.
There's another major zoning one. We'll probably talk about it in the next half hour.
The
so-called missing middle,
right?
Yeah. A zoning petition from the ABC crowd.
Right.
You know, plenty of other things, and we can also talk a little bit about some of the farewell messages, actually, of us.
Oh, I know. I was so shocked. I didn't know about Lisa Peterson. I was surprised.
Yeah, Lisa Peterson, who has been deputy city manager, and she was head of public works for a period of time. Yeah. I first knew her as so she's retiring, and she just sort of retired, just like that. Boom.
I know.
You know? And the
what was she before the commissioner? Because it didn't say that in the thing. And I know she
used to be executive assistant to the city manager, and she was sort of getting trained in management and whatever. Next thing you know, she was commissioner of public works, and then she came back as deputy manager.
Okay, so I see what you're saying. But she was always very passionate about recycling and stuff. She really helped that.
She basically cut her teeth on recycling. Yep. That's where we know her from.
Right.
As I've known her for 30 years when she first took the job.
Right.
So anyway, so we'll
right.
cut out now, but we'll be back in a few minutes on Cambridge Inside Out.